Tonight, shockwaves from the church massacre here in Texas. 26 people killed as they prayed. And we now know about half the victims are children, the youngest just 18 months old.
We've lost a lot of people that are very close to our hearts. And a lot of children are gone. And I just ask everybody for prayers.
8 members of one family gone.
They were a family like no other.
Tonight, the heroes who gave chase and took the gunman down.
He told me that he just shot up, the other man just shot up the church, and we had to go get him.
New details on the threatening messages he sent before the shooting. Possible clues to why he targeted that church and the guns, how he was able to buy them, even with a history of domestic violence. Also tonight, a mystery in Kentucky. Senator Rand Paul left badly injured after police say he was attacked by his neighbor, but nobody is saying why. And late word, a major university bans all fraternities after another tragedy on an American college campus.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Good evening. A painful season of mass killings, from a Las Vegas concert to a New York City bike path, sadly brings us to Sutherland Springs, Texas tonight, suffering through the all too familiar rituals of shock, pain, and mourning in the world spotlight. Behind me, the tiny church that embodied the faith and hope of its members that became a place of such horrific violence. At least 26 people were killed when a man opened fire outside and inside the church during Sunday service. 20 others were injured, the victims ranging in age from 18 months to 77 years. At least a dozen of the victims were children. This community's answer to such evil, unity and the comfort of friends and strangers alike. A vigil last night channeling the hurt and loss into a tribute to those who were murdered and to the power of strength and resilience. We start our coverage tonight with NBC's Gabe Gutierrez.
Tonight, the sheriff here says about half of those massacred were children, the youngest just 18 months old. 8 members of one extended family gunned down while they prayed. In just minutes, great-grandfather Joe Holcomb told us he lost 3 generations, including his son Brian and Brian's wife, Carla.
They were a family like no other because Brian and Carla would give you the shirt off their back if you needed it. They were always helping people.
Debbie Boff has known the Holcombs for 30 years and says Brian Holcomb was so giving, he planned to donate this building where he'd run his small business to a nearby church.
You don't run into people like the Holcombs every day.
On Sunday, Brian was leading the First Baptist Church in prayer. He'd been filling in because the pastor was out of town. Then the shots rang out. Brian's wife, Carla, was killed. So was their son, Danny, and granddaughter, Noah, the 18-month-old. The day before the shooting, Crystal Holcomb bragged on Facebook about her daughters Emily and Megan, who'd done well in a 4-H competition. Crystal, who was pregnant, both girls, and their brother Greg were killed.
That's an incredible, incredible, devastating loss to this community.
The church's pastor, Frank Pomeroy, and his wife Sherry lost their daughter too, 14-year-old Annabelle. They rushed home when they heard the awful news.
We lost more than Belle yesterday. And one thing that gives me a sliver of encouragement is the fact that Belle was surrounded yesterday by her church family that she loved fiercely. Our building is probably beyond repair. And the few of us that are left behind lost tragically yesterday.
Joanne Ward and her children, Brooke and Emily, were also shot and killed. Another daughter, Rihanna, hid, a bullet shattering her glasses, but she survived. So did her 6-year-old brother, Ryland, who was shot multiple times. In this tiny town, population about 700, the loss is staggering.
Whatever life brings to you, lean on the Lord rather than your own understanding. I don't understand, but I know my God does, and that's where I'll leave that.
20 people were wounded. The most serious rushed to a hospital in San Antonio, where an 8-year-old died from multiple gunshot wounds. Lester, tonight, at least 15 people are still hospitalized, including an adult and 2 children. who are in critical condition.
And other people in this community are asking for the prayers of those folks. Thank you, Gabe. As this community mourns, we are getting harrowing accounts, witness accounts of how it all unfolded, and stories of incredible heroism as Good Samaritans leapt in to try to stop the killing. Police say 26-year-old Devin Kelly started firing outside the First Baptist Church before unleashing a rampage inside.
We have six ambushes in route.
Kevin Jordan was home across the street.
I saw him, the guy shooting. I saw him shooting towards it. And then I just ran inside and took my wife and my son, and we hid in the bathroom.
God's understanding is far greater.
This video showing a previous service inside the church, a tiny room, barely a place to hide. Kelly had parked his car nearby and walked to the church, passing near one of Sutherland Springs' two gas stations.
This is where you normally work.
Terry Smith, who operates a restaurant here, was watching in terror.
He was shooting. All you could see was him jerking like this.
From the outside of the
church. From the outside. He was on this side, and he just started walking like a rapid walk, and he just kept on shooting and went all the way around the building.
Did you see him at some point go inside the building?
When he came around, all the way around, and we had customers out here, and so we started yelling for them to get down, that there was a shooter, to get down. And so we were all on the ground, probably to the door to get in. It was so rapid, and then one of the victims came running from that side, and he came running across the street this way, and he was running like this. He had blood all over his arms and his face, and we let him in, and he said, there's a shooter. He shot everybody in there. My family's in there. And he just collapsed there on the floor.
Meanwhile, a neighbor armed with a rifle had started firing at Kelly as he tried to escape. That neighbor coming up to Johnny Langendorf's truck.
He just says, that guy just shot up the church, chasing, following him. I said, all right, let's go.
That's all you knew, is he had shot up the church? And this.
Nothing else. We chased him. We were doing about 90, 95 miles an hour, all the way down 539 until the gentleman, or the shooter, seemed to lose control of his vehicle.
Kelly was found dead inside. Now tonight, in a town where hardly anyone locks their doors, the questions. Why did this happen? How do they move on?
Our community is a very humble community. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, the best or anything. It's just everybody helps each other. Everybody. It's devastating.
After the interview, Terry came back up to me and said, please tell the American people that we are good people, that we are a good community. And anyone who has come here, I don't think, would take exception to that. We're also learning much more tonight about the gunman, his violent past, and what may have motivated his attack on the church here. Plus, new details on why he shouldn't have been able to legally purchase the gun used in Sunday's massacre. NBC's Stephanie Gosk has the latest.
When Devin Kelly opened fire on this small clapboard church in Texas, officials say it was not a random target. Kelly deliberately attacked the place where his wife's parents worship. They were not at service on Sunday.
The suspect's mother-in-law attended this church. We know that he had made threatening texts from him. There was a domestic situation going on within the family and the in-laws.
While speeding from the scene, the 26-year-old's final call may have been to his own family.
The suspect used his cell phone to notify his father that he had been shot.
Kelly's recent past was troubled. Court-martialed in 2012 while serving at U.S. Air Force Base Holloman in New Mexico. He was found guilty of beating his first wife and fracturing his baby stepson's skull. The couple later divorced. The military confined Kelly for a year and discharged him for bad conduct. Kelly's court-martial was the military equivalent of a felony conviction, and federal law makes it illegal for anyone with a felony to buy a gun. But records show Kelly purchased four guns in the years after his conviction. A Ruger AR-556 assault rifle like this one, used inside the church, two handguns found inside his SUV, and a fourth weapon that was not found at the scene. His conviction never came up in his background checks. The Air Force tonight says its criminal investigators failed to put information about Kelly's military conviction into the national database. NBC News also spoke with two former girlfriends who say Kelly's behavior was obsessive and at times threatening.
There was one day, though, that he just would not stop calling me.
How many times did you say he called you during that day?
I would say probably like 30 back to back.
Brittany Adcock met Kelly 9 years ago when she was 13. The repeated calls started after she broke up with him.
Yeah, it made me nervous.
Kelly had trouble at work. As recently as this summer, he was fired from a nearby water park. Park confirming that he worked as an unarmed security guard for just 5.5 weeks.
Tonight, the Air Force announced that it is opening a review of how Devin Kelly's criminal record was handled. Meanwhile, here outside his parents' home, where he's believed to have lived, it remains an active crime scene. Lester?
All right, Stephanie Gosk here in Texas with us tonight. Thank you. And the tragedy here on the heels of the massacre in Las Vegas, two of the deadliest mass shootings in modern American history, once again thrusting the debate over gun control into the national conversation. President Trump has now weighed in while traveling overseas on a trip through Asia, saying this isn't, quote, isn't a gun situation, but rather it's a mental health problem. We get more from our White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson, traveling with the president.
It happened again. A shooting, then tweets, thoughts and prayers.
Who would ever think a thing like this could happen?
And on gun control, any debate delayed.
I think that mental health is your problem here. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it.
Too soon, the president says, echoing his comments last month, 2 days after the worst mass shooting in U.S. history.
We'll be talking about gun laws as time goes by.
Today, presidential pushback on the idea of any new gun laws.
Fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse.
Second Amendment advocates argue that's exactly why the government should not add more regulations, like on the kinds of semi-automatic weapons used in Aurora, Orlando, Las Vegas, and Sandy Hook. Children died then, too. 20 of them. That's what led Shannon Watts to become a gun control advocate.
Talking about mental illness after a mass shooting is absolutely a political diversion.
The AR-15 is one of the most popular firearms in the country, with the National Shooting Sports Foundation estimating between 5 and 8 million are in the U.S. right now.
The government cannot protect us. It's shown that they cannot protect us. It's just that they can't be where the bad guys are. And for us to discuss legislation is to discuss how many angels can fit on the head of a pin.
The president's monitoring all of this from Asia, where right now we are just across the border from North Korea. Here, President Trump will work to build a relationship with the South Korean leader, with White House officials suggesting he will not back off his tough talk when it comes to confronting the threat from Kim Jong-un. Lester?
Hallie Jackson in Seoul, and when President Trump arrives in South Korea, he will be about 30 miles from the DMZ. This weekend in Seoul, I sat down with South Korea's foreign minister, who is hoping the president will demonstrate his resolve for a peaceful solution to the North Korean crisis.
This administration was propelled into office on a pledge of America first. Did that make South Korea nervous? Does it still make South Korea nervous?
Well, I think every U.S. administration wants to find the right phrasing for how it positions itself in the global scheme of things. And this is certainly Mr. Trump's phrase. But I don't think it's entirely new. I think it's just one way of underscoring America's interest in this. But it's not America alone. It's America working with other countries.
Part of my conversation with South Korea's foreign minister ahead of President Trump's visit to that country. Overshadowing the president's critical foreign trip tonight, new questions about his administration's ties to Russia. Millions of documents known as the Paradise Papers, leaked by a law firm in Bermuda, are putting the president's commerce secretary, Wilbur Ross, under new scrutiny. It all comes as the Russia probe is expanding. NBC White House correspondent Kristen Welker has more on that tonight.
Tonight, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross fighting back after accusations he failed to disclose ties to a firm linked with top Russian oligarchs, including Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I think it's just an example of the press
trying to find anything they can, however remote or silly, to attack the president and somehow link him to Russia. This is nonsense.
The leaked documents reviewed by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists shows Ross owns a stake in a shipping company, Navigator. One of their biggest customers is Seabor, a Russian oil firm owned in part by close associates of Putin's, including his son-in-law, and two other oligarchs who are targets of U.S. sanctions. Ross says he disclosed those business ties.
It was disclosed on the Form 278, which is the financial disclosure form in my case, three times.
While Ross indicated he intended to keep his partnership with Navigator, he didn't disclose its connection to Seabor or Russia.
I've asked for an Inspector General investigation. I want all the facts from that investigation.
Back in court today, Paul Manafort, whose request to get out of home confinement was denied, and increased scrutiny of ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Multiple sources familiar with the investigation tell NBC News federal investigators have gathered enough evidence to bring charges in their investigation of Flynn and his son, Michael G. Flynn. All of it will be front and center, with President Trump expected to meet with President Putin in Vietnam later this week. Lester?
All right, Kristen, thank you. And still ahead, the U.S. senator assaulted at his own home. The injuries, more severe than first revealed. His neighbor under arrest, but the motive remains a mystery. We'll have more. Also, the dramatic step a major university is taking against fraternities and sororities after a pledge's tragedy. Stay with us. We're back now with questions swirling around the violent assault on a U.S. senator. The FBI has now joined the investigation after Senator Rand Paul's neighbor allegedly attacked him at his Kentucky home, fracturing five ribs. The motive remains a mystery. NBC's Blake McCoy is there with the latest.
Tonight, Rand Paul still out of the public eye after that stunning attack. His neighbor, 59-year-old Rene Boucher, now charged with fourth-degree assault for Friday's incident inside the gated community where both men live. Boucher's home, right next door to Senator Paul, separated by a grass lawn. Two sources familiar with the incident say Senator Paul was mowing his lawn wearing headphones when Boucher attacked him from behind, Paul fending him off. Paul's office saying the senator is in pain and has five rib fractures.
We're in the midst of another spending frenzy.
Paul, a key Republican who ran for president last year. So what prompted the incident? Neighbors say the two have disagreed on everything from politics to trash for years.
I think their disagreement was probably over where a leaf or a twig fell on a tree.
Tonight, Boucher's attorney saying it has absolutely nothing to do with either's politics. It was a very regrettable dispute over a matter that most people would regard as trivial. Rand Paul tweeting he appreciates the overwhelming support after Friday's unfortunate event. Thank you for your thoughts and prayers. Tonight, Boucher is out on bond. Blake McCoy, NBC News, Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Tonight, Florida State University has announced it will indefinitely suspend all fraternities and sororities after the death of a pledge apparently linked to alcohol and another fraternity member facing cocaine charges. FSU is at least the third major university to suspend Greek life after an alcohol-related tragedy following Penn State and Louisiana State. Take a short break and we'll have more from Texas when we come back. The impact of the tragedy. Everyone here knew someone inside that church. Finally, tonight from Sutherland Springs, Texas, a town so small that every single person likely lost a relative, a friend, or a neighbor in the terrible tragedy here. Here's Gotti Schwartz.
In the heart of Sutherland Springs, the First Baptist Church is surrounded on every side by crime scene tape. The parking lot, once filled with parishioners, is now full of police. Sherry Pomeroy is the pastor's wife.
We ate together, we laughed together, we cried together, and we worshiped together.
People who live here are in shock. Today they wear wristbands given to those searching for loved ones, and Mary Dykeman has lost eight.
Oh, there's at least eight that I can think of right off the bat.
Mary is a regular of the First Baptist Church, a sanctuary where decades of baptisms, Bible studies, Sunday services, and fellowship dinners held this community close. This Sunday, Mary felt compelled not to attend, but her next-door neighbors went.
It's so heartbreaking. It is. They helped me out a lot.
But their home is still empty. Dogs sitting on the porch waiting for owners, and some will never return.
I'm going to really miss not seeing her there.
But here, in this small town, even in the most fragile of times, the lessons of the church giving strength to love in the midst of so much pain.
So
Gotti Schwartz, NBC News, Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Such heartbreak here. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, good night.